This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey, everybody. It's Andy here, and you're listening to the Conquering Columbus podcast. And on this episode, Mike and Josh are talking to Rita McNeil Danish, the CEO of Signal Ohio, which is a nonprofit news network focused on bringing focused, relevant news to communities they serve. Early on in the episode, Rita spoke about her career as a lawyer and judge.
When I graduated from law school, I really thought I wanted to be a criminal defense lawyer. And my father, having been in criminal defense for his entire legal career, was like, I'm not sure this is what you want to do. And so I had an opportunity to go to a law firm, even though it was foreign to me. I really looked at whether or not I wanted to live in Columbus or whether I wanted to live in Chicago. So when I graduated, I had job offers from both Chicago law firm and Columbus law firm, and I chose to stay in Columbus. Then I did litigation, trying to be still consistent with being in the courtroom, but not doing the criminal defense thing. Long story short, I found myself leaving that law firm and going to work for then Governor George Voinovich and being part of his legal team when he first got elected. And that became the impetus for a number of other jobs, including being chief legal counsel for the Department of Commerce. So I kind of went in a very obtuse direction, and I went where my passion took me or where I thought I would be able to make a difference.
Later, they asked Rita what made Signal's news different from your typical local news station. And here's what she said.
Because we are community-based journalism, instead of the journalist telling the people what they want to hear or telling the people what's important, instead, we are letting the community tell us what is important, what is rising up from the community that are issues of import. So for example, one of the things most important to many of our communities is education. And so all of our newsrooms have an education beat reporter, and some of them have K-12 and then higher ed, and some just have K-12. But we are letting the community be the drivers of those things that are important, because that is what's going to pull our local community back into news.
As they wrapped up the show, Rita gives some advice for our listeners.
Don't let fear get in your way. Be willing to take the change. I would be lying if I didn't tell you I was like, oh Lord, what am I doing? Because I'm leaving the practice of law, which I knew for 30 years, and I'm suddenly deciding to be a CEO of a journalism entity. But you have to be willing to follow your passion, because it's the passion that's gonna get you up in the morning. It is not the money that's gonna get you up in the morning. After a while, making money is gonna get old if you don't have the motivation and the passion.
As always, we hope you enjoy this episode, and thanks so much for tuning in. All right, that's it from me. Let's get on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here. We've got both me and Josh in the booth today. Josh, how are we doing?
Doing good, dude. You're dressed snazzy, huh?
Yeah, I've been trying to dress a little better. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, being the leader of the sales team, I feel like you can't just be wearing a t-shirt. It's just not.
You just look very fall. I feel like you're about to just jump out of a pile of leaves right now.
Well, I get to control my temperature in my new office here at FMX, and I prefer it cold, but I like to stay warm at the same time. So, you know, and with that introduction.
Leader controls the temperature in his office? Gee whiz.
Well, we're already getting out of control here. So why don't we take a moment to introduce our guest today? She's laughing already. So joining us on the show today is Rita McNeil Danish, and she is the CEO of Signal Ohio, an independent community-led nonprofit newsroom. It's one of the largest local nonprofit news startups in the country, with a newsroom in Cleveland and one upcoming in Akron. Rita's based right here in Columbus. She has more than 30 years of professional legal experience, and she has previously served as commissioner on the Ohio Civil Rights Commission, city attorney for the cities of Cincinnati and Dayton, Franklin County judge, and legal counsel in the Ohio Governor's Office and the Ohio Department of Commerce. So making a little bit of a switch here, going from legal to news, but we're excited to have Rita on the show to talk about Signal Ohio, the importance of reliable local news, and more. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Rita.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's very exciting to have you here, and I love talking about local news, so I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Cool.
But first place we always like to start, how's your day?
My day's good. My day's good. I'm at the end of it, so that's always bonus, right?
Yeah, yeah, and we appreciate you spending it with us. You know, we, Josh and I juggle this with our day job, so it's always tough to get these scheduled, but when we can, it's great. Talk to us a little bit, though, about your career, your journey, like people who might not know you, right?
Sure.
A little bit of background.
Sure. So I always start with the fact that I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. I still call Chicago home.
Bears fan?
Bears fan.
Oof.
Diehard Bears fan. I won't tell you the Bears I remember, because then that would also date me. But I can tell you that my dad was a diehard Bears fan. And so as a little girl sitting on her dad's lap, that's what you did on Sunday, was watch the football game. grew up in the city of Chicago. My father was a criminal defense and civil rights lawyer. My mother was an educator. And as a result, we did all things about the community. So I grew up thinking about the greater good and mm-hmm. how do you make a difference? How do you leave a place better than you found it? Mm-hmm. I then decided to go to law school. It's a funny joke because I actually deviated out of college because my father wanted me to go to law school. The rebel in me said, I think I'll wait a minute. I took a job, which actually brought me to Ohio first with Coca-Cola USA. Mm-hmm. We won't dwell on that. We'll simply say I ultimately decided I did want to go to law school and that my dad was correct. And I went to The Ohio State University College of Law. And then after graduating, decided to stay here and practice law. And I did a number of positions, both in the private and public sector. Mm-hmm. But most notably, as you identified, I had the great fortune of being city attorney for the city of Dayton. I was the city attorney for Cincinnati, Ohio, most notably right after they had their own civil unrest in 2001. But I also then came back to Columbus, where I got the fortunate opportunity to be a judge on the domestic and juvenile court.
I feel like that would be a tough court to serve on.
It was tough, but it was rewarding. Mm-hmm. Like you really felt good, like you were making a difference. I treated my courtroom, probably why I took this job, in that I took it as an opportunity to educate and enlighten and not let anybody be intimidated by the court or the process. And so I wanted everybody to feel like, even though it might feel like it's their worst day, that it was a good day, mm-hmm. even though it may be a challenging time in their life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, right? Obviously, getting into that civil rights
yes.
motion and your dad
yes.
being also a civil rights attorney, right? I mean, how much of that was inspiration mm-hmm. from him versus lived experience and driving change? And like, was there any moment where you thought like, maybe this isn't when you went into law specifically, because I know you were going to go to Coca-Cola, but we don't talk about that.
No, we don't talk about that. Yeah.
So was there any moment where you thought about doing something other than civil rights?
Actually, the funny thing is when I graduated from law school, I really thought I wanted to be a criminal defense lawyer. And my father, having been in criminal defense for his entire legal career, was like, I'm not sure this is what you want to do. And so I had an opportunity to go to a law firm. And so I went to a law firm that no longer exists today. And I said, I'm going to try this law firm thing, even though it was foreign to me. Mm-hmm. And I really looked at whether or not I wanted to live in Columbus or whether I wanted to live in Chicago. So when I graduated, I had job offers from both Chicago law firm and Columbus law firm. And I chose to stay in Columbus. Mm-hmm. So then I did litigation. Yeah. Trying to be still consistent with being in the courtroom, but not doing the criminal defense thing. Long story short, I found myself leaving that law firm and going to work for then Governor George Voinovich and being part of his legal team when he first got elected. And that became the impetus for a number of other jobs, including being chief legal counsel for the Department of Commerce. So I kind of went in a very obtuse direction mm-hmm. and I went where my passion took me or where my experience would be able to make a difference.
I want to get to Signal Ohio. I don't want to spend too much time on your
That's
career,
right.
but you've done a ton of stuff.
So I have.
I'm curious because, you know, not many people have the perspective of being on both sides of the bench, mm-hmm. right? How did being a judge mm-hmm. change your perspective on the other side of that?
I think that it was important to be empathetic mm-hmm. and understand the plight on the other side, mm-hmm. understand the intimidation, but also understand how lawyers think. If you understand what people's motivation are, then you can understand how to get to the end goal. So where I think I was most successful as a judge is I understood how people thought. And oftentimes I would bring people back into my chambers and say, how do we get to a win-win? Mm-hmm. How do we get to a place where everybody walks away at least feeling whole? And so I think because I had that insight and understanding people and that empathy, I thought I was successful at it.
Yeah. I guess a good point to kind of talk about Signal. So how does all of that experience, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. roll up into the decision to start working at a local news agency?
Okay. So I have to tell you the story how I got recruited, because I think that speaks volumes. So I get this notice or this message on LinkedIn. You know how you get the indication that someone's left you a message on LinkedIn? And I pull it up and I'm like, I don't know this dude. And who is this person? And is it for real? And I do the typical lawyer thing and I Google him and I look him up and I find out that he really is with a search firm. And it kind of says, hey, this isn't your normal lane, but I think this is perfect for you. And would you consider it? Just do an initial call with me. And I remember reading the description for the job and I said, And then I gave it to my husband and he goes, Mm-hmm. And we both were like, have I done everything in my career to bring me to this point? And so I did the initial call with the recruiter and it took off from there. The thing about it is Signal to me is where civic engagement in the community meet journalism. And I think that that is the way to the future. That is the way out of where we are right now. And I think that it is an opportunity to re-engage the electorate in our communities and the people in our communities. And so because I had that community activism background from my parents, because I had that Chicago background where it was about greater good and also about leaving a place better than you found it, mm-hmm. I felt like at this juncture in my life with all that I've done, that this was my moment, that this was what I was supposed to do. And so that's how I ended up with Signal. I also found that journalism is not that different from law in terms of your values. You know how when you get married and you say, I want to make sure we have the same values, or mm-hmm. when you have friends, you find those who think like you. Well, I found that journalism and law were very similar in that we have ethics, we have values, we believe in truth.
Yep.
I know not all lawyers believe in truth, but we believe in truth. We're defending something, and oftentimes right. we're defending the law or the Constitution, and so are journalists. And so I found that there was that commonality that really worked and resonated with me.
If it wasn't Signal, where would you have taken your career outside of that? Have you thought about that, reflected on that?
No. So I was a partner in a law firm, and I was working with small minority women-owned businesses, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And I was working with municipalities and other governmental entities creating programs for minority women and small businesses. I would have continued to do that. I would say, though, with the latest decisions coming out of the Supreme Court and legislation, mm-hmm. I tell people often, I'm not sure where that work is going to be in a year or 2 years from now, given the composition of the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. given the way the legislatures are passing legislation against DEI and all kinds of other things. But at the time, I would have continued to do that because that was my passion. And because I had been in local government for so long, I have a sweet spot for local government.
And after that ruling, there's a lot of money driving lawsuits against DEI.
Yes.
Any type of DEI initiatives.
Any kind of initiatives, right. any kind of programs, they are trying to strike them down left and right.
Yep.
Yes.
I want to back it up, though, a little bit. You mentioned that Signal is where civic engagement, mm-hmm. community, and
meets journalism.
Mm-hmm. Meet.
So, sometimes I say marries journalism, but right. yes.
Okay, fair
yes.
enough. So I want to unpack that a little bit. I think civic engagement is a word that gets used a lot in news and journalism space, but maybe people don't fully understand. So can we unpack that a little bit and talk about what you mean by that?
Sure. So let's rewind completely. In the recent election, whether it's a primary or the special election we had, we're always looking at turnout. Mm-hmm. Where are the people? Do people care about the issues that are prominent today? What are we doing to make a difference in our communities, whether they're local, whether they're national? Civic engagement says, I want to engage and make a difference. I want to be part of the solutions and the issues that are creating problems in our society today, or I want to at least be part of moving change. So many people have decided to check out. So many people have decided, I can't make a difference. I can't move the needle. So rather than do that, I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to engage. And I'm not going to be part of the process. Mm-hmm. And we can't have a true democracy. We can't have an engaged society if everybody checks out. We have to have everybody, I always say, rowing in the same direction, trying to move towards some goal, some future that is better for your children. You want it to be a better place. And so that civic engagement is people rolling up their sleeves and being part of the solution and not just deciding, I don't want to play at all.
Yeah, it's funny to me because, so growing up, I was always taught, you know, my dad was a political science major, a couple things, right?
Okay,
but
okay.
Hey, we're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic, it's different. But at a local level, very often, it is a full democracy, right? We can put laws into place in Ohio with a simple majority vote if
right.
you get it on the ballot. But all that to be said, where you have the most influence is where you see people voting less.
Yes.
And I've always found that to be a kind of strange paradigm. This wasn't on the outline, so I'm asking you questions. If you don't know the answers to these questions, we'll cut it.
Okay.
But what percentage of people vote and actually are active in their local elections?
So if you use your normal primary numbers, mm-hmm. depending on your urban city where you have greater turnout usually, your numbers are like 20%, 30%.
So 20% of the people are making decisions.
Decisions for the greater.
For the greater.
Yes.
So how do we change that?
Well, you change that because people decide to care.
Mm-hmm.
Because people decide that I can be part of making a difference. So many people have decided, I can't change what happens in Congress, so mm-hmm. I'm just not going to engage. I don't care who's in Congress because they don't represent me. So part of that is a little bit of, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home, mm-hmm. right? I don't want to play anymore at all. And so what you have to do is you have to to say to people, you can effectuate change. Mm-hmm. You can be part of it. You know, we have a society where people go to the news that appeals to their interest at the time and are no longer looking for truth. They're no longer looking for the facts. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get back to a place where truth and facts dictate and people are eager to learn that truth and that facts. And so if people decide to re-engage, then they'll decide, I want to know for myself. So what we often say in terms of the news is that an informed electorate is a better electorate. And so we want to be the source that informs you, that provides you with the best nonpartisan news and information that keeps you informed. Because if you are informed, then you are educated.
Yeah. And that component that you just mentioned is the hardest part of all this, which is understanding, hey, where can I go to get unbiased news, the facts, just the facts? Because I think today it feels like everybody's got to spin.
Everybody's got to spin.
Everybody. And we're humans.
Right.
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 We're going to put our own spin. We can't possibly completely remove all our biases. So how do you go about, other than obviously going to Signal and getting some news, right? How do you go about understanding that as an individual in the community and figuring out where to go?
So I think it's a process almost like we did in law school. It's a process by which you are provided facts and information that is neutral, if you will, and then you are empowered to make your own decision. So given this information, what do you choose to do? Do you want to go left or do you want to go right? Instead of me telling you left is better because it's going to get you there quicker versus right. Instead, I can tell you that left is 5 miles and right is 6 miles, but right is expressway and left is streets. Then you can evaluate for your own self. Do I want to go left or do I want to go right? Do I want to go expressways or do I want to go on the street? You know, given all of that information, then you can factor it in your own brain and decide what motivates you, what moves you, and what makes you make a decision.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus. And we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
So in what year do you officially join the Signal team?
I joined this year in January, so 2023.
So talking about the structure and where you see the future and the vision going, like jumping into it, do you feel like you've acclimated already and you've wrapped your arms around everything that there is in the organization? Do you already have a vision mapped out in your head and where you want to go going forward?
So I always say I do have my BHAG, my big, hairy, audacious goal, which is that I want to have newsrooms in the urban cores. So Columbus, Cincinnati, and Cleveland. We also have the ones in Akron, but I also want to make sure that we have newsrooms in our rural community because we can't neglect them. They deserve to have the same good news and information that our urban communities do. So when I think about it, I say, I want to make sure I have the newsrooms in the three urban C's, but I also want to make sure that I'm hitting Appalachia. I want to make sure I'm getting the Daytons and the Toledos and we're getting Akron. And then if I can then change the trajectory in the state of Ohio, so goes Ohio, goes the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. If we can begin to make a difference in news in Ohio, then we become the role model for the rest of the country. So for me, I want to be the role model for the rest of the country. I want to move Ohio in a different direction where everybody is saying, I want to get my news from Signal. I want that non-biased, non-partisan, factual information.
And in pursuit of doing that while simultaneously juggling the ideology you mentioned of, you know, the highway is 6 miles and the street is 5 miles and make the decision on your own, I got to imagine it's challenging getting funding behind where a lot of people who are wealthy, successful business leaders who might contribute to something like this have a very one-sided concept or one-sided political view. And so to put something out there like this, has it been hard to get support and continue to get collaborators behind the organization?
You know, I would have to tell you that one of the things that is most amazing is when I go to speak to groups, the response I get is overwhelming. The excitement comes from the people. And I actually wasn't so sure, but I will go speak and I am energized when I leave there at the fact that everybody wants something different. I think we have reached I won't say an all-time low, because Lord knows we can always go lower. But I think we have reached a point where everybody recognizes something has to change. Something has to be different. And so I am energized, and I talk to people, but not just about journalism. I talk to them about the civic engagement. For some, that resonates. For some, it's democracy. For some, it is true information. And then for others, there are cities in Ohio who no longer get news. We call them news deserts. They are no longer getting any kind of news. So they're going to that news of choice instead of looking for the best source of good factual information. And so I want to be able to give them an option. And many people are concerned about that. People are concerned that without the news, without good news and information, that it destroys where we are, or it continues to destroy where we are, because then we start to do crazy things.
Yeah. And I also think that as people have gotten better understanding of how social media algorithms work, like educating on these topics of like, hey, by the way, you click that article, you're going to get more articles just like that with that spin, right? So you got to be really careful and understand what you're getting fed news-wise. I think I hear a lot more people talking about that today.
Yes.
So I agree with you. I think we're kind of in a pivotal moment. It all reminds me a little bit of, think of the newsroom. Mm-hmm. You ever seen the newsroom?
Yes.
The analogy of the whole show was the mission to civilize Don Quixote and the mission to civilize the news and bring it back. And
yes.
So it kind of reminds me, it's got that kind of a vibe of like, we're going to bring the news back. We're going to make it good and healthy and the right thing for our communities.
Except I would give one caveat for Signal. Because we are community-based journalism, instead of the journalists telling the people what they want to hear or telling the people what's important, instead, we are letting the community tell us what is important, what is rising up from the community that are issues of import. So, for example, one of the things most important to many of our communities is education.
Yep.
And so all of our newsrooms have an education beat reporter, and some of them have K-12 and then higher ed, and some just have K-12. But we are letting the community be the driver of those things that are important, because that is what's going to pull our local community back into news.
How do you gauge that?
So we do it a couple of ways. We combine our program with something called the documenters. And let me explain to you a little bit of what the documenters are. A documenter is an individual who is paid, we call it a civic side hustle, to attend government meetings. And so that's your meetings, whether it's city council, whether it's a commission meeting, but it's also a school board meeting, it's a zoning meeting. And they go to those meetings and they document. They basically take notes, they live tweet, but they are talking about what's going on at that meeting. What is special about what we do is then they work in conjunction with our newsrooms to create stories and talk about the things that are going on that are bubbling up from those meetings that they're attending. Today, most of your newsrooms no longer have reporters in those governmental meetings. So now we have governmental accountability, because when our politicians are being watched, they tend to behave better. And but we're also looking at the agenda, and we're looking at the issues, and we're actually calling the question on certain things. So what that happens is stories will bubble up. They'll bring a story to their editor, and oftentimes the editor will then engage the reporter. So what happens is you are getting information straight from the community about what's important. Another added benefit of the documenters and that civic engagement, that going to those government meetings, is you also have them telling their friends and their family that, A, I now understand the governmental system. B, I'm no longer intimidated by it. C, I can tell you that I now trust news, because I am part of the news and you should trust it too. And then you have this building effect that will come because we are reporting the news up from the community, we are building trust, and we're growing that trust throughout the community.
What are the other growth strategies and initiatives that you're deploying to try to get more attention and viewers on the content that you're putting out?
So we do a number of things. So in each community, we take a look at the research and identify what are the needs of the community, how do they receive their news. So I'll tell you, for example, one of the things we learned in Cleveland is there's a high illiteracy rate. As a result, we have stories being read on the website. So if someone cannot read, they're able to get the news because the story is being read to them. We do public forums on issues of key import. We actually do forums in community meetings, et cetera, to allow people to come to the public forum. We do handouts and give them the information that they may not otherwise get. We use comics because that may be appealing to some people. We also are using SMS texting. And believe it or not, our younger generation, which you all probably fall into, they're getting most of their news from Instagram and TikTok. Mm-hmm. And so we also have to engage. So our goal is to meet people where they are everywhere. And so we're trying to utilize a methodology that is, if you can imagine it scattered, that if we know that these are the needs of the community, and then we're trying to produce news in a way that they're going to receive it, multimedia and everything. So we're trying to make sure that we are capturing everybody in that way.
Are there any dynamics behind that from a brand positioning perspective? And what I mean by that is, like, when I think about where I get my news, the accuracy is definitely important to me, but I sometimes don't want to have to think critically on whether or not, you know, it's like, are all these things really what I should be paying attention to? So if I see someone that's successful, or I see business leaders in the community reading that same source or promoting that same source, I say, well, this is where the successful people go. This is where I should go.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to be said behind getting maybe more of the community leaders behind things? And is there a focus on that at the moment?
I think we have a diversified focus. So I think it is important to engage everybody on all levels. And so I would say, I think of it this way. People are receiving their news and information from a number of sources. So I don't know about you, but I get a bunch of alerts from a bunch of news sources. And what I want is for everybody to include Signal in that, and then we become the go-to. But I think we have a diversified methodology. We focus on community, but at the end of the day, they did a survey, the American Journalism Project did a survey and said that most readers, affluent or not, no matter what the ethnicity or all those other things, they believe that local community news is important because that's what we think is important. That's what we care about. And that's what we think we can change. So I don't think that changes by the person. And so I think whether it's the person who has or the person who doesn't have, that I think they're all going to be looking and seeking for this news and information. And there's no paywall. That's the other thing that's different about us.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't charge. We have what we call members, subscribers, but you don't have to pay. You can just go on, subscribe for the newsletter and receive it for free.
Yeah. And you beat me to the punch because my next question was literally going to be, hey, if people are listening to this going, Signal sounds pretty cool, how do I sign up for this?
Yes.
Where do they go?
So you can go to signalcleveland.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually go to signalakron.org.
Nice.
We actually have our splash page up for Akron, but we're hoping to launch on November 1 or thereabout. But you could actually go and say, I'm interested in Signal Akron when you're ready to launch. Or today you could go to signalcleveland.org and you could subscribe and start receiving the newsletters for free.
Plug in an email or a phone number, right? All kinds of options available, right?
Because we talked
about not everybody has email.
Yes.
So make sure it's accessible.
Yeah. Yes.
After Akron and into the future, right? We talked about expanding to Ohio.
Yes.
What are the biggest roadblocks now from continued expansion?
Well, you know, first is always going to be revenue.
Yep.
We've got to be able to raise the dollars. We are heavily funded up front with philanthropic support. So we have huge philanthropic support that is supposed to carry us to a certain point while we then devise a plan to get major givers, to have some advertising, but not the advertising model of your legacy media, and then to use those subscribers and members who say, I want to make sure the Signal stays around. And that is our growth opportunity. And if they say Signal is important, then they'll contribute. Many people liken it to NPR, except the difference is NPR, you have to pay. And with us, you won't have to pay. And I think they have different audiences. I often talk with people about NPR and they have a totally different audience. So obviously, to answer the question, though, revenue is always going to be important because we've got to create sustainability beyond the philanthropic support. I cannot rely on the major philanthropic support in the long run. We also have to continue to attract our audience. We have to continue to be interesting, to be that source of community local news and be the one that they trust. And we can't lose them. And so audience becomes very important. Delivering what matters to them, delivering it in a way that they want to receive it becomes important. So audience becomes important. And then lastly, you got to have everybody caring. And you got to decide that you're not going to check out, but that you care and that they want to be part of my vision to change Ohio.
Love it. I want to pivot the conversation a little bit before we go to some of our last questions of the show. Josh, you got anything on this topic before we move on?
Nope.
Josh is my deep thinker.
Yeah, he does. He really, he is. He does like to think about his questions before he asks.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at your career, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about your experience in civil rights. Obviously, we're in Columbus. We're conquering Columbus. So I wanted to ask, you know, where do you see the most opportunity for improvement here in Columbus? What should people be paying attention to right now in Columbus?
I think that Columbus is a landscape for all kinds of opportunity. I lived in Columbus, left Columbus, came back to Columbus. And I will tell you, the Columbus I left is not the same Columbus I came back to. And I think that because we are growing and because we are changing, that we have an opportunity to grow and change with it. The landscape has got to change. And the days of some of the corporate titans are gone. And that means it's our opportunity to embrace and to lead. And so I think that where some people feel a void or a vacuum, I think it's an opportunity. And so I think about Columbus, you know, as compared to a Cleveland and Cincinnati where there's all the old money, they're very different communities. Mm-hmm. But Columbus is new and we've got all kinds of new and exciting things happening. Let's embrace them, but let's take them to the next level and let's not be afraid to do so.
Yeah. Love it. That's a great place to head towards some of our last questions of the show.
Okay.
And it's been great talking to you so far. So first one is, do you have any advice for our listeners? Now, we've been talking about a lot of advice on community engagement today. So I want to focus this on career advice. And
And,
you know, if a lot of our listeners, right, they're either entrepreneurial minded, they want to be engaged with the community, but they are also, you know, really just looking to hear how people got to where they are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, any advice for them?
So the first thing I laugh at is when you talk about my multiple jobs and you talk about the fact that I moved a lot of places, like I moved from Chicago to Ohio and I found myself an Ohioan, you have to be a little fearless. Don't let fear get in your way. Be willing to take the change. One of your questions is about when I did something that was outside the norm, I conquered, right? And that was this job. And I would be lying if I didn't tell you, I was like, oh Lord, what am I doing? Because I'm leaving the practice of law, which I knew for 30 years, and I'm suddenly deciding to be a CEO of a journalism entity. But you have to be willing to follow your passion. Because it's the passion that's going to get you up in the morning. It is not the money that's going to get you up in the morning. After a while, making money is going to get old if you don't have the motivation and the passion. And don't let fear get in your way. And don't be afraid to want to make change. Don't be afraid to follow your dreams. At the end of the day, if this doesn't work out and something happens, I can always go back to be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to let that become an impediment or something that you can't get over.
Yeah. Don't shackle yourself, right?
Don't
hold yourself back.
And don't get stuck. Yeah. You know, don't be afraid to dream. I tell young people, don't be afraid to move. When I was a young girl, my parents insisted I went to college outside of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really understand why. I now understand why. So I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. That was a long way away. But that was the beginning, I think, of my parents planting the seed to go do you. Live your life and do it the way you want to and as authentically as you can. So I think that people have to step outside their comfort zone and do what, you know, you normally wouldn't think about doing. Take that leap. And if all else fails, you can always go do something else.
Yeah. And that leads perfectly into our last question of the show, which is centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. So without telling you too much about why we chose that phrase for a show about entrepreneurs, business leaders, people who are really driving change in Ohio, what do you think of when you hear it? How does it apply to your life and career?
I would say two things. So at one point after I left Cincinnati, where I worked at the chamber, and I worked a lot of small businesses and larger businesses. And I always used to think corporate America was very complicated. Mm-hmm. And after being at the chamber, I was like, I don't think this is that complicated. So I decided to start my own business. I then did a little bit of a deviation. A friend asked me to be his city attorney in Greensboro, North Carolina. So I moved to Greensboro, North Carolina. We'll talk about Greensboro, North Carolina another day. No offense to those who may be from Greensboro, but I would say it's probably not the most progressive. And so I ended up coming back to Ohio and doing my consulting business. Mm-hmm. That was a leap for me. That was uncomfortable because I'd been a city attorney. I'd been in the structure of municipal government. And I decided I was going to go out on my own and do this business. And to this day, I still have the business. Obviously, I don't have much time for it now. And then when I took this leap with this job, it was a leap. It was at moments, what was I doing? And I told the recruiter and the search committee that I thanked them for the process because it was a lengthy process. But at every step in the process, I had an opportunity to ask myself, is this really what you want to do? And is this true to who you are? Is this your mark you want to leave? And when I was all done, it was. So it was uncomfortable. There are days where it's uncomfortable, but there are moments where I'm like, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Love it. Rita, thanks so much for joining us and talking about Signal Ohio today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. And Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. That was Rita McNeil-Danish, CEO of Signal Ohio. If you're in Cleveland or Akron and you happen to be listening to this, you want to get more local news, go to Signal Akron or signalcleveland.org.
And stay tuned for Columbus and Cincinnati and a Statehouse newsroom.
There you go. You heard her. So thanks so much for tuning in. If you like this interview, you want to hear more just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. It'll make sure you don't miss an interview from us. We appreciate your support. We'll talk to you next week.